right, you thought you'd get away with it, huh? All right. Hey, you know, I personally think we pussyfoot a lot. You know what is it, pussyfooting, don't you? You know what pussyfooting is. I mean, we're a nation of good guys. We don't really say what we really think, you know. No way. It's very hard for anybody to say what he thinks. How many times have you gone over to some friend's house, you know, and you're sitting there, and he starts telling you a long, boring story? Now, what is your first thought, you know? Say, well, what is it? What's with the long, boring story? Cut it out, Stanley. That's boring. And then he shows you his pictures, which make the story look like Moby Dick. If there's anything more boring than looking at a friend's picture, I would like to, any kind of picture, I would like to know what it is, unless it's his wife, you know, streaking across the yard or something like that. But usually, you know, if I see one more set of pictures about somebody's kids, I'm going to do what Dorothy Parker always said she was threatening to do when somebody told her about Winnie the Pooh. I'm going to flow up. I mean, well, I'm going to tell you, very honestly, Shepherd makes W.C. Fields look like a social worker in charge of seven-year-olds. I'm telling you this. You know what I do with kids? You know what I use them? You can see Shepherd isn't burdened with his own. You know what I do with a kid? I'll tell you what I use on them. Fly swatters. Boy, it's very effective. Get out of here! Bam, there I got him. Look at that little... Get out of here! Stick out! Oh, there's another one! Okay. Well, you know, I don't want to offend anybody there who's a kid kook, and there are many of those. This is the first nation, I think, in the history of the world, Jim, that could be honestly called a juvenocracy. Yes, it is. It's a juvenocracy. Other earlier societies were patriarchies. Oh, patriarchal society, like that. Victorian England was a patriarchy.
Really?
There have been matriarchies. We had a matriarchy in this country till recently. Yeah, we were a matriarchal country. Oh, yeah, almost everything was aimed at the housewife. Oh, yeah, you know, she was... a matriarchy, now we're talking about a true matriarchy. We're not talking about who governs. That's not, that's nothing. Governing is not where the real power is. No way. Nixon found it out. Seriously, the matriarchy, we used to have a matriarchy. You remember Philip Wiley writing all that stuff? There was a famous book about it called A Generation of Vipers. You don't know about that book. Well, you stick around, you're going to learn all about books. But, I'm amazed at how many people don't know much about what was written before yesterday afternoon's post. And even then, they're a little weak on that. You know, if you ask them closely, you notice that they move their lips when they read the racing form. And, I'm sorry, Dave, I wasn't referring to you, but reading is you know, there are the talented, and then there's the others, and some can't. So, nevertheless, I must say that this is a juvenocracy. Practically every family I know, the entire world revolves around these three little toads that, you know, that now, in the very real sense, I know guys, I know one guy, the other day I made, you know, meet him next to the water cooler, see, and I said, what's the matter, Bob? And he looks thin and pale. And he said, oh, God, oh, it's just traveling. I said, what do you mean traveling? What do? You been on a vacation or something? No. He said, you know, it's 2 hours up to Connecticut in the morning, 2 hours back, 2 hours, 4 hours a day I travel on the train. I said, well, why do you do this, Bob? Well, it's Madge, you know. She says, it's a nice place to raise the kids. I said, but yeah, but it's a hell of a rotten place to raise you. Look at you. I said, you're going down the drain here, man. You look 107 years old, and I know you're not over a day over maybe 95. Look at you.
Yeah, but, you know, the kids, the kids.
I said, what the hell, kids? What do you mean, the kids?
Oh, it's good, you know, they got a good school out there.
I said, good school? What do you mean, a good school? Well, you told me yourself that little Stanley can't read, and he's 17. Little Stanley, 17, little Stanley. And he said, what do you call it, little? That lunk is 6'9", weighs 270 pounds. Eats nothing but Fig Newtons and drinks Ripple wine. And you tell me he's little Stanley? Are you kidding? Well, he's little Stanley to me. I said, bull, little Stanley. Little Stanley's hanging around the pool room every night, and you're working away. And this is how many guys live this way, you know? They really do. That's a juvenocracy, man. You better believe it. That's right. A very real sense. I know one guy who was before he was married. Before he was married, this guy's about 19, 20 years old. He's all part of the juvenocracy scene, see? And I said, one night, we go out to this place, see? We're going to have dinner, a couple of us, are, you know, a bunch of guys hanging around, bucks, you know. We go into this place. And he says, no, he said, I don't know. He said, I better pass, fellas. It's a little steep for my blood. And he got paid like everybody else, you know. And I said, what do you mean? Howie, what are you talking about, little Stevie? What the heck? You only live once. Come on. Heaven's sakes, let's go down there. In fact, I'm going to have two big boys. I mean, hell, I just figure you can't take it with you. And I may even have some fresh fries on the side. And I'll have a choco mocha malt. What the hell? Life is short. And he said, oh, no, I can't. I don't know what I said. I'm going to go home and eat some cornflakes. I said, what for? What are you saving for? What are you doing? He said, well, you know, I'm saving for my kids' college. I said, you're doing what? I didn't know you had... Hey, fellas, Howie's saving for his kids. Holly, well, Howie wasn't married. He says, Howie's got kids. He's saving. He says, no, wait a minute, fellas. No, wait a minute. Look, fellas. No, wait a minute. You got to plan ahead. Oh, no. No, I want to plan ahead, and when I get married, I want to have kids right away, and then I want to make sure that I have enough money in the bank at that time for the pay their way through college. Then me and the wife won't have to worry about that, and then we'll have all the rest of our life to live the way we want to live it. When the kids are out of school, I says, Howie, wait a minute, you haven't even met a girl yet you want to marry, have you? Well, no, he said, but I know it's going to happen one time. After all, that's what life's about, getting married and having kids and sending them to college, right? I said, no, Howie. That ain't what life is about. It's what life in the United States is about. He said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? I said, Howie, this is the only place in the world where people live their entire lives for this kid named, this lout named Clifford, who hangs around down in the basement and smokes pot. I mean, you know, I mean, it's the only place in the world they do that. He said, oh, come on. What do you mean? You mean it's the only place in the world they have kids? I said, no, it's not the only place in the world where they have kids. But it's the only place in the world where your life is built on having kids. The only place in the world. I mean, they don't do this. It's unknown, totally unknown, for a Frenchman to live in a house only because the kids like it. Why, the back of my hand, mon Dieu, caramba! You know, that's what he would say in Spanish. You try that in Hungary, he says, ain't him put him touchy, and he give him a shot in the back of the neck. That paprika! The kid goes out and has to eat his chicken by himself in the doghouse. No way. Only in America, right? Which shows, of course, we're a far more civilized nation. I just feel, though, that... like the other night. Now, this is the kind of stuff that really, really makes you wonder, you know. And once in a while, I make a foray into suburbia. And it's always very, very enlightening to me that the suburbia types are very different from... From walking around people. Suburbanites have a whole different set of values, very interesting set of values. First of all, it's based largely on, among other things, you can't just say material things. It's based largely on real estate, on the house, the house in capital letters. I wonder how many guys' lives, people, women, I'm not talking about just men here, I wonder how many human lives have been devoured by a house. A house. Somehow, just the term house scares me. That's not the same as a home. A house. And I know guys with 30-year mortgages. Can you imagine putting down money and saying to somebody, in effect, I'm going to live here for 30 years? My God, the life expectancy of the human male in America today is around 69. That means you're, and when a guy is able to do this, at the point when you're making a statement like that, you must be probably in your mid-20s or up through your mid-30s before you ever would say a thing like that. No guy at the age of 5 is going to buy a 30-year mortgage. You're in effect saying, this is where I'm going to be the rest of my life. That would scare the daylights out of me. Now, on the other hand, I think there are people who want that. In short, I say that that today you have two kinds of men. Yeah, because you always did have. And the conflict has always raged between them, the nesters and the movers. And there are people who, from the time they're 5, are looking for a nest to curl up in and stay there. And, you know, they want this nest. They're driven by the nest. Now, they're going to people that nest. You know, just like you people the West. They're going to people the nest. And that's why you hear so many guys talk more about their property, their yard, their automatic sprinkler system, their lawnmower, their, you know, how quick it starts and has dual carburation now. I know one guy that has a lawnmower. It's roughly the size of a Winnebago. Has a bar in it, stereo, the whole bit, color TV. And he, you know, he drives around white wall tires and the whole business. And they talk more about this stuff than they do say about their wife. Can you imagine Romeo dropping by Sears to buy a new lawnmower? And back home, Juliet is she's a member of the PTA now. And she spends all her time driving back and forth in the station wagon and taking the kids to the Little League and the Cub Scouts. And Romeo, you know, you never see the second act. You never see really the play. The real play is the play that occurred after Romeo married Juliet, and about 10 years later, you know, and he's sitting in this bar in Verona, and he's sitting there lapping it up. See, and in comes Clytemnestra or somebody. He says, "What's the matter, Romeo? What's the matter, Paisan?" And he looks up and he says, "Oh," he says, "it's, what is it? Same thing." He says, "What is it?" He says, "Juliet again. She's on my neck again." Well, now this may sound like a sardonic, cynical show here, but it happens to be also very true many guys, and I was going to say, I go out to the suburbs the other night, my yearly foray into that strange world there, and a lot of stuff comes to light, and all these guys, in this one room alone, this is in the affluent suburbs, I would say among the 75 people who were there, there was a minimum of $800 worth of tailored Levi slacks alone, you know, studied casualness. And yes, it was all there, everything. They even had a symbolic black there. It was fascinating. It was almost like out of one of the beer commercials. It was really fascinating. and so he and I are standing in the corner talking away, see, about the inner city. See, this is where I live. And he lived out in the suburbs. He kept talking about, you know, we know about, he didn't know about the inner city. This guy lived out there too. You know, he had a $5,000 lawnmower himself. So we're standing around there, and one of the guys comes over, and he's sort of looking he's got a kind of a pensive look. All the other guys are lapping up martinis and yelling and hollering, eating the peanuts and the macadamia nuts. The only place you find macadamia nuts is in very elegant suburban parties and on TWA. I think TWA designed that nut. I never saw him before I started to fly airplanes, did you? Or don't you fly that much? Well, you know all about macadamia nuts. Yes, and smokehouse salted almonds. That's American Airlines. You get that all the time on them, yeah. So, nevertheless, you know, I'm an aficionado of all this. I know the only airline in the country where when you order a drink, you order bourbon, you don't get old granddad. You get Maker's Mark. How's that for an esoteric bourbon? I told him that. I says, you know, that shows real taste. Esoterica. I says, the next thing you know, it's going to be George Dickel here. Or maybe we're going to get one of the real elegant Tennessee bourbons. The next thing you know, I'm going to give up walking. I'm going to do nothing but flying around, you know? But nevertheless, you like this kind of al fresco show where it's all hung out, you know? It's out in the open, right? That's al fresco. Yes, al pesco is when we get one of these memos, you know. That's one of them pesky memos, you know what al pesco means? No, well, it doesn't matter. Just suffice it to say it comes with a slight cheese sauce on it and is fattening. But nevertheless, this guy walks into the crowd and he says, with a note of triumph in his voice, well, he said, of course, you know, in the middle of the conversation, he just dropped this little thing. So, of course, you know, you realize, of course, that I've left Gladys, you know. And I said, oh, yeah, really? I didn't know him. I never met him before. But, you know, it was kind of nice to know he left Gladys. And so he talked about this at great length, about leaving Gladys. And a couple hours later, see, I'm with another guy. And he says to me, he says, well, it's no wonder. He said, you know, I said, how long have you been married? He said, oh, 25 years. I said, what? Are you kidding? Yeah. So they hated each other every minute. Fantastic fight. They fought each other tooth and nail. I said, you mean he 25 years and now he's ready to leave Gladys? His boy, was she ever glad when he left. And I says, well, gee, I'm kind of glad they finally did it, you know. And he said, yeah, they sure did. I got to congratulate old Murph. And the name has been changed to, as you probably know. And so, nevertheless, I thought about this. I thought to myself, blasted lives. Hopes and dreams down the drain. I'm not recommending you don't make any involvement. I'm recommending you be more careful. That's all. And also, you must take that beer commercial to heart, friends. You only go around once. You know, that's it. And you ought to say to yourself, you know, is this the way I want to live the rest of my existence? Well, now, of course, if everybody actually asked that question, can you imagine what would happen? Can you imagine the headlines? I mean, can't you just see, local news, Jim Jensen comes on, and he says, an amazing thing happened today in Manhattan. There were 6,957,245 resignations today. Over three-quarters of the city resigned its job, said the hell with this, and ran out. Do you really want to spend your entire life? You know, like the other day, somebody sent me a company magazine. You know, you see some fantastic things in company magazines. And here's this very proud-looking lady. Now, it's going to sound like I invented this. It's a very proud-looking lady. You ever look in company magazines? They have the Bowling News, and they have the news of the annual banquet when Mr. Bullard gets his watch. They have you've seen those company magazines. They're really great. And here was a page of pictures of people, see, who had gotten their 25-year pin in the last month. It's a big company, see. And here was this very proud-looking lady, and her hair was all done up. You know, there's a certain kind of lady when she gets her picture done, she goes to the hairdresser, gets her hair all made up in these little round barrels. You know, so kind of curious-looking hairdo. And she's looking very, very proud out of this picture. And underneath it says, Mrs. C.L. Witherspoon, 25 years, last month, celebrated her 25th anniversary as the leading gizzard inspector in the company. She inspects gizzards. I'm serious. Now, a gizzard, now, you think I'm inventing this? 25 years looking inside a chicken's guts. Now, there's dedication. It's either that or it's madness. I can't tell which. But anyway, you know, I was thinking about that. I was driving along. I was thinking about this, you know, that of course, circumstances of people's lives, this is why we have a literature. This is what literature is about, you know. But it never does anything. There's no way you can get out of any known book, and please don't send any tracts to me, please. There's no way you can get out of any novel, any handbook, anything that is at all relevant to the day-by-day life that you live. There's just no way. And the sad fact of it is that most people... And I think, you know, getting back to the whole idea of juvenocracy, I think most people, so many people in this country, I wonder what it's going to be like. I'll bet by the year 2000, I'm making a prediction, that not everybody will live to see. But I think by the year 2000, this is beginning to change, you know. By the year 2000, I suspect that a person of today, if he were to come back in the year 2000, would hardly recognize the social structure of the daily lives of the people of that period. And a lot of our buildings are based on a past social structure. I'm talking about the business. Do you know that in certain parts of the country right now, already they're feeling that? They've built giant schools. Again, this is a part of the juvenocracy. They've built an enormous school with a fantastic gym and a tremendous auditorium. I know one school out in Pennsylvania that's got an auditorium alone. It's a high school that makes anything on a Broadway stage look like kid stuff. I mean, they have a fantastic auditorium, a whole big gym, and oh boy, it's controlled atmosphere and everything else going for it. And there are less and less kids being born there. And the school population is dropping off rapidly. And that means that by the year maybe 2500, these school buildings will be almost museums. I say, yeah, that was back in the days when people had seven kids. Stuff like that. People said, you mean they did that? You mean they just went out and without any, just indiscriminately had kids? Oh, yes, it was considered, believe it or not, a great virtue to have many children back in those days. And they're going to say, a virtue? Are you kidding? Yes, it was. Great virtue. And it will be inexplicable to the people of that time. I am predicting this. In fact, they may even just arrest somebody once in a while for having a kid without a license. you think that's funny? Some countries are getting to that already. In fact, America's fighting it tooth and nail, but other countries are really beginning to make moves in that direction to do something about curbing the population. But when you... and this is interpreted, incidentally, by many people as you're anti-life if you don't want to have 50 kids. But actually, I don't buy that at all. In some ways, I think it's almost anti-life to have that many. And you're going to find an argument going on that score. But it is sad to me, though, to find so many people all of a sudden arrive at a certain point in their life, and everything they plan in their life is always in the future. And this is the chanciest thing of anybody's existence, the future. And yet, more people than I care to admit to knowing are planning all these fantastic things in the future. This is always a big thing in their head. One day I'm going to... dot, 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 dot. The saddest words of pen or man. One day I'm going to. And, of course, then you have, again, the basic split between the movers and the nesters. I must admit I'm a mover. I'm making no value judgments because the world has to be of both. No value judgments at all. But a nester gets kind of vaguely nervous when in the presence of a mover. As if you're some kind of a kook. What do you mean? You don't have a place with a lawn and the hedges and the bushes and the things out there and the fountain squirting up in the water there. Just think, if you move down here, you could have a swimming pool. I said, oh, no, no. I don't want any. Please. No. On the other hand, there's some of that in both of us. You know, one of the saddest things is to see a nester married to a mover. Oh, that's murder. That is murder. And it can be either a male or a female. I mean, there are many nesters that are men. Have you ever driven up into places like Vermont and the local natives will point out something on the hill? They'll say, look up there. And you look up there and say, what the hell is that? You know, you see this strange, enormous, misshapen house. And they'll say, oh, that's a Kluberman's Folly. What do you mean, Kluberman's Folly? Well, Kluberman built on that house for over 75 years. He kept building new rooms on it, and he kept adding new additions to it. And he put out placebos, and isn't that a placebo? A little place where you have a swing, right? A placebo? Sure, of course. And he had all these things going there, see? And then the day he died, the carpenters arrived for the next big move. Kluberman's Folly. That's a nester. The bigger, the more solid, the more enormous the nest, the more secure he feels. Yep, we all have a secret admiration for gypsies. I mean, your entire existence is on wheels. Starts raining, you move. People start saying bad things in the neighborhood, you move. You see a cigar butt laying on the street you don't like, you move. Just keep rolling and looking at all and digging it. Now, you know, what are you going to do? It's just the way it is. You have to accept life for what it is, right, Jim? No, you don't. Wait. Stop right there. Did you hear what I just said? I said you have to accept life for what it is. That is not true. And that's the whole point of this show tonight. You do not have to accept life for what it is. You have made what it is, you lout, you knave. God did not say to you, thou shalt buy a $700... automatic electrical driven lawnmower. Or thy shall be a sinner in the eyes of thy neighbors. No, you just did it yourself. God did not say, thou shalt live in Darien and forever be in peace and desperation because thou hast 18 children and thou is looking for a good school for thy children's.
Now go now.
No, he hasn't said that. You said it. Oh, yeah, well, that concludes tonight's salute to McDonald's.
And once more, the horn blows at midnight. And calls to thee and thee and thee, and the bell ringest out, clear and brilliant in the ambient air.
That's kind of nice, isn't it, huh?
I bet not one of you can tell me who I'm quoting. All right, you dumb nut. I'm quoting me. Okay, bring it up. You dummy. Who am I quoting when I say that, you dummy? Red Fox. All right, Jim. Hello, Jim, you dummy. Hi. Join the rest of us, Jim, huh? Join the rest of us dummies sitting around in here. Bring it up. What's it all about? Have you ever wondered, you know? You don't wonder, huh? You just sit in the back seat of the Pontiac and eat French fries, right? That's right. A little ripple now and again. A little Thunderbird, maybe, yeah. Oh, well, all right. Makes you cough. I know a guy that pours Thunderbird over butterscotch ice cream. He says it's fantastic. I know another guy that puts vodka in his strawberry you. Oh, man. Orphan Annie's downfall.
By recording from New York, you've been listening to The World of Gene Shepherd. Do join us again tomorrow night at 6:30.